Ring, ring.
How's it going, buddy?
Wasn't sure how that was going to go, Hawks.
I think it went pretty well, honestly.
All right. The first second, just to let everyone know, behind the scenes, we have not talked at all.
No, I mean, not since...
No, I mean, like, in the conversation. You know, sometimes when you do a podcast, you ring up and you go, hey,
what's going on?
What have you been doing? Like, let's talk about stuff. But we are like that ring ring guys.
That was the original.
It's legit.
Mm-hmm.
These fake ass podcasters, they're perpetrating.
Not us.
Sorry, I listened to a lot of unasked for hip hop on the bus the other day. So I've got all this street lingo. You got to check this thread on my Facebook page, Hawes.
I did. It was awesome.
I got the local bus for the first time in, it has to be a quarter of a century.
Oh my goodness.
Because, you know, once you get your license, it's like, you know, you kiss the shame train goodbye. And, woo, it was real. It had everything. I just needed a fight. There was no physical, like, there was no, like, that's, so I can't ride the bus again because it was so good. It was such a great experience.
Ah, okay.
And by great, I mean anyone else is terrible. But I was sitting there like a pig in his trough, enjoying all the low-level culture.
I got to say, buddy, that along with your Kmart thread, real good. Real good. Real, got a real big laugh out of me on my lunch break today when I was reading that article about Kmart.
So for those that don't follow me on Facebook, and congratulations, I complained about the reconfigured Kmarts on my Facebook. and like a major news website picked up on it and did an article about the Kmarts being called out. It's just bizarre. But we are here to get a Hawes calls in.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've been in Australia working on my shop, and Hawes, someone came into the shop the other day. I'm just trying to establish everyone why it's been a little bit between pods. And they said to me, I bet you're enjoying your holidays still. And James, the manager of my store, is up the other end of the shop, and he heard this, and he just laughed and went, oh boy.
That's funny.
As he knew the tirade was about to come. It's just like, bro, I just did 4 days in a row, 15 hours of work every day. This is no holiday.
Yeah.
But that said, I do, like, with all my heart, love my inverted commas job. So I'm in the trough, but you still can't call it a holiday.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
Like, or for our American listeners, vacation.
Which today is my first day back at work after my vacation.
And happy birthday.
Thanks, buddy.
A podcasted happy birthday, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to say, Hawes, you're not ready for this, but it's coming. Hawes Burkhart, 40 years. You've had a less than stellar year, 12 months.
Yes.
But you're still Hawes.
Yeah,
you're still like... Like, you're still a joy to be around. A lesser person would let it eat you up. And don't you talk, but you are a role model. You are someone that I would like my son to learn from, just about, like, just staying true to yourself and not, like, just, like, keeping at it. And I know you're quite often very down on yourself on the podcast, but you are you're exemplary.
Thanks.
I'm using words I'm struggling to pronounce, so this is how much I mean it.
Well, buddy, I appreciate that, man. It is really hard not to be bitter and shitty about it, but I do my best, and I appreciate you. I got to be honest with you, buddy. More than anything, I appreciate you recognizing that or acknowledging that. That means the world to me, buddy.
Well, in the rap lyrics, they did say you better recognize. So,
so you're just, this is just more fallout from your bus ride. Love it.
Yeah. And I imagine there was a lot of like Zs or Zs in that recognize. Mm-hmm. So, here I am. But, you're the man, Hort. So, never forget. Never forget.
I'll do my best, buddy. You want to argue about the Mandalorian? No, I'm just kidding.
dude, I've got to be like you watching this season. I swear to God. It's a mix of emotions.
So, you know, this is the thing. The first two seasons of Mandalorian, I felt like I had to try really hard to find stuff I didn't like. You know, this is one of those instances where Star Wars is doing something that feels sort of tailor-made for me and my Star Wars interests, right? Now, this third season, I'm finding it easier for, you know, things that jump out to me. I can't shake the feeling that something is missing, and I can't really put my finger on it other than to say, like, I think it's maybe a general sense of aimlessness for this season so far.
Yeah, it's like that's, I feel like that happens every season a little bit.
But you know, and I do like, I think I was talking to our buddy Rick Villanueva, and he was like, well, you know, I remember people feeling that way about the first season, and then things would come back and you'd be like, oh, it wasn't filler. And I wouldn't, you know, I'm not the kind of guy to say something's filler, but I didn't have the same feeling those two seasons that I do this season in regards to that. Like, I never felt that way or worried about it being sort of aimless the first two seasons.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, displeasure, it has multiple levels. Like, there's multiple things I wish they'd change about the way they put together the show. And the aimlessness, like, I do think in the end it will all combo and you go, oh, okay. And that's a total thing. And we will talk about that. I have got thoughts on that. But my core thing is just the logic jumps and, like, even like if you're going to do the story like this, at least make it like you got to tighten it up.
Yeah.
Like, and not to do with the story, but like I don't want, like, I'm trying not to get into the minutiae yet this early up, but just like the Mandalorians, oh, we just lost another child standing in this exact same spot again.
Right.
The bird always gets away. We got the big crocodile or whatever. But yeah, it's just stuff like that where it's like, and the dinner, having dinner when you're going to save your son.
Yeah.
But again, I don't want to go that hard into it yet, because I sort of want to go through, we've got three episodes we haven't talked about, but it's just like, that's my top thing, is just like, well, if you're going to do it like this, just seal up the gaps a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it
honestly feels like it wouldn't be that hard to make some slight changes and sort of smooth out some of the rough areas that make me bristle, even as a huge fan of this show.
Yeah. And then, like, I definitely think it's Favreau's sort of season writing pattern, where it's all these separated things that, you know, they're all clues for what's going to happen in the finale. And, you know, that's his writing style, but I don't know, I sort of, it's lost its charm. Like, it's back to everything that's secret is good. Lucasfilm, like, marketing, or, like, they put too much weight in, secret. It's secret.
Mm-hmm.
It's secret. I'm pretty sure I know what happens in the last episode, because I'm so used to their writing pattern of everything that's said
that's comes back.
Pretty much everything that's said that isn't talking about the past, and boy, do they do a lot of that, is talking about the future. I'm here, I'm at my mum's house, my mum and dad's house in Rosebud. And they've got, their internet is very limited. Like, mum sort of just mainly uses her phone connection for internet if she ever needs to use her desktop. So I'm just running off phone internet. So I'm pretty down low. But before, when I was near good internet in my shop, I did download the three episodes that we hadn't talked about. And last night I started watching the first episode, which is episode two. And I did end up turning it off because I just couldn't be bothered.
Oh, see, now I really like to.
No, I was, because I'm so, like, down on it. And for those that don't know, the Pershing episode, I absolutely loved. Except for the logic gaps. Like, there's a few major logic gaps in that one that's sort of like, well, I loved all the stuff on Coruscant, but, like, you're doing things in a past, future, past space history that I sort of was like, yeah, I know you're in this wondrous world, but that doesn't make logical sense in anyone's galaxy. And we'll discuss that. But the Peli, who I love, every time she spoke, it was just making me, in retrospect after the four episodes, cringe with just like, oh, like, and then R5-D4, he blows his flap just like in the first movie. and then every time when R5-D4 was like, you know, he's on Mandalore, I'm just like, why is it R5-D4? Like, what purpose... like, what difference does it make that it's R5-D4 to the story at all? And you go, well, it doesn't make, but it's a reference or whatever. But it's one of those references that just takes me out of it. That it's like, and it does make the script seem like it's written by AI, because it just seems to use established things, mashes it around, and here we go. Like, it's all based on someone else's previous work. How do you feel about that analogy?
I think that's a solid analogy. I think that is one of those things that, you know, depending on your particular taste, your mileage may vary on that. I think that episode may have gone, even for me, who is typically that Leonardo DiCaprio meme of him, like, drinking the beer and pointing at the TV. That's kind of me watching these episodes. Like, I do enjoy a certain level of that. I do see what you're saying. I think that one kind of pushed the line even for me. But I'll tell you this. Never has a character turned from somebody I adore to somebody I don't like faster than Peli in that episode.
I thought you were going to say R5-D4.
No, no. When Peli said to Din Djarin, what are you here for? Are the Hutts back? You're going to take on Boba Fett? Take on Boba Fett!
I see, we hate those lines for totally different reasons.
Yeah. And obviously I'm just joking a little bit. It's kind of my bit now, but I like, listen, buddy, when the episode started and he was going to Tatooine, I was like, okay, cool. Like, we're going to see Boba. We're going to see him. Cool. Nope. Not even.
He's like, busy because it's Bunter Eve.
Yeah.
Star Wars reference.
Yeah.
And like, even that was just like, it was too much in the one section, like R5-D4, Bunter Eve. And then she goes, something about the Rodian and the Jawa. It's sort of just like you're trying to impress this disgruntled, they don't understand the law YouTuber, but way too hard.
I hope that's not what it is. Oh man, I hope that's not what it is.
Yeah, I reckon it is, because Favreau's sort of always like, oh, you know, we make this for all the fans to enjoy, and but they seem like, that seems like they think doing references is what makes it for all the fans to enjoy. And like, I do know that some people do that, like they enjoy that sort of like a sugar rush compared to a Andor's like roast meal. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, it's cheap. That's the word I was looking for. They're just cheap thrills.
Okay. I get that.
But the guys that ride and the girls that ride Marvel Star Wars comics must be just looking at it going, whoa, that's a lot of references.
Oh man.
But it has gone to a real Marvel Comics level of, here's this amazing character and thing, and somehow it's sort of like, then we reset it and keep going. You know, and that's my initial thing, you know, we talked about last time with the, like, if Moff Gideon is like, would you say Moff Gideon's already escaped, given like, so, given the Favreau hint guide to what's going to happen in?
I kind of feel like it, like, because they've said, like, for exactly what you said, right? In the first episode, you know, when he's talking to Grief, they bring that all up, and he's like, I heard he went to an imperial or a military tribunal, and then in the third episode, the tribunal gets brought up again, and somebody says, I heard he escaped on the way. Now, my gut tells me that that's probably what happened, but I think it is a disservice that we don't get a kick-ass Moff Gideon escaping scene, if that is the case.
Show, don't tell. I don't want to be... I'm getting told...
Mm-hmm.
Everything, like all the, and there's a loophole because of the Book of Boba Fett, but everyone's that was in that finale scene of The Mandalorian Season 2, again, I'm using the loophole of the Book of Boba Fett, but no one's story post that has been like their predicament. Like, they get to this, like, I can't believe what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't even, what happens next? Well, we fast forward 2 years, and we'll just give you a quick line about what happened next. So Bo-Katan had that cruiser.
Yep.
You know, a major change for her. Gone. Got taken away. Moff Gideon, presumably, was captured. He's escaped. Grogu was with Luke. Well, that's obviously reversed. Din had his helmet off. You know, he took it off, like, on purpose for no other reason than to connect with his son.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't for, like, you know, when he was with Bill Burr, it was to, like, not die. sort of thing.
It was to find Grogu.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yep. But yeah, it was part of that whole mission.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and then just ironically, it just adds to it. Cara Dune, like,
well,
totally poochy, but it adds to the, you know, and I don't want her like followed up on or anything. I just think after, it's not worth the PR or just knocking the hornet's nest. You don't, like, people go, oh, you could continue her story in comics or novels. No, just, just like,
I don't, you, like,
you can just do a Panaka to Captain Typho. Am I saying the right names there?
Yeah. No, it's
other, you know what I mean?
Like, Captain Typho to Panaka. Panaka was in the first one and then was replaced, right?
Yeah. So, oh my God, I can't remember Panaka's name. Hugh Cauchy. He wasn't happy with like the cash and not getting a script and stuff, and he sort of thought he should get a bit of a bump to come back. So he held out. And so they just replaced him with his in-storyline cousin, maybe, or nephew something. Or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it just continued because it's just like a secondary character. It's not that, like, pertinent. And when the character's real-world history is so loaded, it's just like, let it go. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think they will. I think we'll never hear her mentioned again.
Now, like, you know, before she showed herself to be the kind of person that she turned out to be, you know, I thought the character setup for Cara Dune was fairly fascinating, you know, an Alderaan survivor who becomes sort of a mercenary. But I didn't find it fascinating enough to necessitate comics or books, right? Like, I think those words and that mental energy can be used on something way more interesting in Star Wars.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty intriguing, the whole, you know, she was from Alderaan and stuff. And, you know, I think at the time definitely would be commenting that she wasn't much of an actor, like, but it sort of just fit in with the sort of comic book campiness of the whole thing.
Right.
Because even Greef Karga, like, he's like, I don't know. Like, I love Carl Weathers, but his delivery is, I just think of that dude that's like always making soup.
Okay.
You know, from Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
His delivery in sort of parodying himself isn't that different than his acting delivery. But it's sort of, it's what makes his character have that extra charm sort of thing. Is that at any moment he could, you know, get a rancor bone and you got a soup going.
Yep. Oh man, I would laugh so hard if they did that as a reference.
Settle down. No more references. Pause. Right. No more references.
All right.
Let's have
a reference-free episode.
Let's have something. That in 20 years, let's make something that can be referenced in 20 years.
See, I like that. I think that is a valid point, right? Like, if we're constantly relying on reference after reference and not establishing the new stuff, then it gets stale, right? And I don't know, man. And like I said, I'm definitely a little more lax on my feelings about the references, but I don't. I've noticed it this season. Like, I've noticed the uptick in it even.
I know this will warm your heart, but I'm going to hit you with a sweet patented wrestling analogy. Are you there, Hawes?
I'm here. I'm ready.
I thought maybe you fainted with excitement. But, yeah, so wrestling, you know, it had its peak at the, you know, in the Attitude Era, which is like Stone Cold and Triple H and The Rock, you know, DX, The Undertaker. And that was the boom years. And then before that, the boom years in wrestling was like Hulk Hogan in the 80s and the Macho Man and stuff. And then as wrestling, the Monday Night Wars ended and wrestling's popularity like declined considerably, because it's sort of like a peaks. It has its, you know, it's like a cyclical business, how it enters the mainstream pop culture, you know, maybe like every like 10, 15 years. But what they would do is when they'd go to WrestleMania in like the 2000s and stuff, they would bring back these old acts for big money to be like the headliners. And it would be all about, hey, we've got all this stuff from the past here.
Mm-hmm.
And they were building that up as the attraction, rather than building up their current stars that were going to be working for them for the next 10 years as like the new Rock or the new Stone Cold.
Mm-hmm.
So after, like, you're at a point now they've sort of like got over that hump, because they do have like a new sort of batch of, you know, biggish stars. But there was a time between when they were bringing back these old acts to come back, and then eventually they get to an age where they can't even come back for that one match a year. And so you're sort of left with nothing, because you haven't built up your new stars to be valuable. And I sort of, like, I feel like that's sort of like in the writing with The Mandalorian. It's just so the past. Like, you've got, like, on this first episode, you've got the droid from Star Wars that blew up, a different colored Boba Fett, and, you know, Yoda's little brother. Like, it's all remixed and they're on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
It's Anakin Skywalker's N1 fighter.
Yeah.
Which I do love the N1 fighter, as impractical as it is.
Now, but I gotta say, buddy,
It's like one of those things, but all of those things at once.
Mm-hmm. Now, just as a quick aside, you know, I often sort of bemoan the fact that they don't do Star Wars vehicles anymore. Oh, mm-hmm. You wait until that announced Den's N1 Starfighter goes up for pre-order. I gots to get that. I gotta get that.
Yeah, I won't get it, but I am keen to look at it.
Yeah. Well, you come hang out with me and look at it, buddy.
You know, that's one, if I see on the shelf in Target, I'm going to pick up and look on the back of the box, mm-hmm. and read all the features.
So, you know, I do have this glimmer of hope for sort of the overall story of this show, kind of related to what you're saying. And if this is what they're doing and they pull it off, I think it will be pretty satisfying, right? But like, I almost wonder if something about it being so reliant on the past kind of ties in with Din and his covert, right? Being so hardcore, stringently following the past in this creed, and like sort of the lesson that they need to learn is if they're going to continue, if they want, you know, Mandalorians as a whole to continue, then they need to break away from that past. Now, that is probably way headier than Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau ever thought about sitting around a typewriter sharing a joint. Because I tell you, buddy, every interview those dudes do together, they're stoned. Takes one to know one. And but if that was kind of sort of the overall tone they were going for, and they were able to pull that off, I would think that was pretty slick.
So are you theorizing that R5-D4 will be a major plot point?
No. I'm saying just sort of the overall idea that the Mandalorians need to grow and change and move on from the past being...
Yeah, I don't know. I hope so, but even like in the movies, well, with like the Rise of Skywalker, no one seems to ever learn any lessons because they're so... The writers are so enamored with how cool the characters are that, and I'm leaving, you know, Rian Johnson obviously is the exception to the rule, but like in the right, like, you know, Luke had this big, you know, Darth Vader was kept secret from him and all this and Secret Leia, and they seem to be doing the exact same thing to Rey with like, and I know it's like, cause they added in this plot point, but you know, Luke suddenly knows that he's, that her granddad is Palpatine. And like, when did he find that out? And why, you know, and same with Leia, why didn't, like you've made the same mistake that the adults before you made. And there's no, and even with, the like the Jedi, like how Luke made him choose between his dad and being a Jedi.
Right.
It's like, didn't you learn anything about the story of your dad? Like Anakin Skywalker? Like,
yeah. Now I'll be honest
like,
with you.
Like, isn't that the progression forward where you advance and you're like, I survived all this, saved the galaxy. Hey, let's redo the Jedi. Let's try bring them back. But how about we let them have attachments? Because that seemed like attachments saved the galaxy.
No, that is, to me, one of the weirdest decisions is the fact that, like, so, you know, I am not 100% caught up on what all Luke was up to post Return of the Jedi through books and comics and stuff. But you would have to imagine that at some point, you know, he realizes, oh, you know, my dad's attachment to my mom and, you know, the Jedi pushing back on that played a part in his downfall. And look what his downfall did to the galaxy. Maybe it's time to rethink that. The fact that Luke immediately sort of went back into the prequel Jedi approach to being a Jedi is one of the weirdest decisions in Star Wars to me.
Because a lightsaber didn't save the galaxy. The Force didn't save the galaxy. Love saved the galaxy.
Right. No, exactly.
You got to type quieter.
Sorry, buddy. I got a real loud Boba Fett keyboard. It's real slick, though. Shoo, it's cool.
I don't care about the reference. Why do you say you're as bad as those guys? You could have just said loud keyboard.
Well, because I know you like a good use of the license. You know? My man likes a good use of the license.
How about, is it possible for you to sort of bring up some sort of summary of these episodes that we can run through it? Or you sort of got it in your head?
Oh, yeah, buddy. You know me. I got it.
So that whole Bunter Eve thing, that, like, again, that's just like separate from everything else. It's like, oh, cool little reference. But when everything's a reference, I'm like, oh man, Bunt, like, is there any point to this other than the fireworks? Like that sort of visual, mm-hmm. But it set me on a path. I did think, and this is again, is work out your plausible story that works before you add your references in.
Right, like that kind of seems like, you work out, you get the plot and everything super solid, then you pepper in the references as that extra little spice, right?
Sometimes they reference themselves into disbelief from where I'm watching. For instance, right? Mandalore. The people that live there don't go, like, used to live there. They're tied to it. They're you know, they're in these weird societies all honoring Mandalore. It's so ruined the planet, or poisoned, or cursed, or whatever, that people just don't go there. You just don't even know if you could survive on the planet when you landed, or if you could land. That's my understanding. Am I right so far?
Yeah, that seems right on.
All right. So someone goes there to this forbidden, death-ridden planet, gets an ancient artifact, goes to Tatooine and trades it for something to some Jawas. Now, it's a reference, but why would Jawas want this? And want it in such, like, this guy or girl or creature has gone to a lot of trouble, obviously, to get this artifact. The Jawas, what value would they put on it? Like, how much did this guy need a droid part that it was worth a trip to the forbidden death planet?
Right.
Do you think I'm nuts?
No,
or
I
like,
no.
Oh, that's...
No, that's an important piece of information, man. That, like, I agree. Like, as a sort of throwaway plot device, right? I don't even know that you needed it, right? Like, why not just have Din go, well, I want to see for myself, right? Like,
we'll just say he got it on the planet that Andor shot it on the guy in the back or something. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, if you need to have a reference, but, like, you say Jawa and it's like, oh, Jawa.
Yeah.
Yes. But it's like, huh? Why would, you know, like, if you've got something, like, just say you've got a really valuable Star Wars toy, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't go into an everyday pawn shop to get a good value on it because they're not going to appreciate it. It's like, right. Oh, but this is da 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 da. It's like, I don't care. I'll just, like, it's sort of, yeah, it just doesn't make sense given the gravity of how hard it's meant to be to get to Mandalore. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, piece of the moon. It's pretty expensive. Like, for us, do you know what I mean? If you've got a piece of moon, like, you're not just going to swap it with, like, go down to the local junkyard and go, hey,
I've got a piece of moon. Yeah.
Can I trade it for those hubcaps, please? It's, yeah. And it's such a little thing, I know. And it's not, like, the whole show doesn't fall apart on it, but it's like a, it's indicative of, like, sometimes where it's just like, hey, you're over-referencing. Like, because the reference doesn't even fit. And even with, I think it's in that same episode where Bo-Katan and Din are both flying away from possibly Moff Gideon's TIE Interceptors. It's TIE Interceptors, guys.
Now, Steel.
Guys,
Steel.
It's
no.
TIE
buddy,
Interceptors.
Buddy, you're going to have to give me this one. I'm sorry. I'm putting my weird foot down. That was sick. I'm sorry. I love the TIE Interceptors.
No. The scene was sick, but it's just the way that in the script, it's like, it's TIE Interceptors. Like it's, I don't know. It seems like they spell out, like, it seems like the script would have, like, a lot of, like, registered trademark logos in it.
That's pretty good.
Or, as I said, on Twitter, it just seems scripted via Comtech chip. It's like, we've got all these Comtech chip lines. Let's try to fit. So in that bit, right, there's, like, you know, like, 30 ships show up on the thing. And Din just goes, because you can only speak in previously said Star Wars lines. We've got company. And then 2 seconds later, there's too many of them. And it's like, I don't know, we've got company. Come on. Like, that is like bad Star Wars Rebel scripting. Like, it's so on the nose. And then there's too many of them. It's, yeah, like that scene is sick, but just the contact chip scripting is, I don't know. Other people might be going, oh, it's all lines from the movies I watched once. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm the line repeating, I understand getting an eye roll out of that because
they multiple, like when the character only speaks in the lines.
Right, right.
And don't, like, we, you know, fast forwarding, but it's a trap.
Oh, bro. Uh-oh. No, sir. I thought I had a stroke. Like, I was like, they did not.
And it is this surreal Twilight Zone moment where he's being tricked into getting a brain thing. And it's all horrific. And you're like, you know, no. Like, it's all wrong. It's like this horrible situation he's in. It's a nightmare. And you're captivated by it, which I was. And then it's like, here's a funny Star Wars quote. Here's a meme. Meme, everyone. And then it goes to the, like, the Mon Cal sort of tilts his head weirdly.
You know, it would have been like if, you know, in that final showdown between Obi-Wan and Anakin and, or Vader and Obi-Wan, like when his helmet's all busted and he's given this emotionally wrought speech about how, like, you didn't fail me, Obi-Wan, or I'm not your failure. If Obi-Wan just stopped and went, hello there. Or when he saw Anakin's face, if he went, hello there.
The, I am biased. The saving the hello there for Luke Skywalker.
No, I think that's a good use of it. I agree with you. I think that's a good use of it.
I'm obviously emotionally attached to that series. Like, I can't even.
No, buddy, I totally get it. I wouldn't, and I can't see how anybody else would fault you for that. Like, that's a big deal.
And yeah, when he said that, and because they saved it, and I sort of thought they showed in Obi-Wan a lot of restraint against going that, but that's sort of like, and because I love little Luke, but when he said that, just Naboo waterfall Star Wars reference on my face. I was just like,
bruh.
But I, like all this, I tell you what I do love and I find really intriguing is that it's sort of like, I like the way Bo-Katan is now, as Din seeming, it seemed like it, he was like, hey man, I think this is all a bit of a hoax. Like, it seemed like that's where his character was going. But, I don't know, some stuff in the next, like, that now I'm sort of just like, oh, no, he's still as deluded as ever. But I have liked the way that Bo-Katan is sort of, through what she's seen and, like, she's now seems like more of a believer than Din.
Yeah.
And I find that story and how she saw the Mythosaur and I think she's the most, do you know why I think maybe she's the most intriguing character to me? She was once deluded, I feel like, but it seems like this season, barring Grogu who can't talk and Buddy, never talk.
Oh, he's
because
going
once
to.
You talk, no, dude. Once you talk, they're gonna put that Milo tin on your head for the rest of your life. Just say nothing. just because if you never talk, then you never have to wear the helmet. Like, that's all I'm always just like, why would you want your son? Like, just the ears alone. It's gonna be like ridiculous looking or very uncomfortable. I'm not sure how. What do you reckon on a Yoda? You reckon ears can tuck in? Could they tuck into a helmet, or do they have to have? Because I've got my 90s Elusive Originals Yoda latex reproduction in front of me here in my old bungalow. And this is no indication, but his ears were very stiff. Yeah. Now they're all cracked and they're falling apart and there's foam coming out. And man, if you thought he looked bad when he was 900, you should see what he looks like when he's 920. It's not good times for old Yoda.
Okay, hold on. Check this out, Steel. This is official Mandalorian concept art. Okay, I didn't realize this. So I was just doing a quick image search. Baby Yoda wearing a helmet. And this is official. Can you see this that I'm sharing?
Oh, is it
on the screen?
Skype or something?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how. It's just because I don't have screen. Text it to me.
Okay. Yeah, I'll text it to you. It's long story short, the ears are tucking in.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. Okay. Well, that's better, I guess, because it just seems like it's going to be really uncomfortable. But yeah, I just don't talk. But anyway, to my point, Bo-Katan, excluding Grogu, who can't talk, everyone else, every other character in the show is either deluded or evil.
Yeah. No, she seems the most reasonable out of the main characters this season. And, buddy.
Oh, my God, that's official. That's someone at Lucasfilm did that?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd feel like they'd really do a lot more passes on that, because it's pretty much just Boba Fett's helmet jammed half on top of him.
Yeah, I don't know if that is from, maybe that was some of the concept art for Book of Boba Fett or what, but it's definitely not up to par with a lot of the end credit concept art, right?
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm sort of like, I'm enjoying Bo-Katan because, like, she's the only one sort of acting reasonably given her circumstances. My vibe on her was she was just sort of like playing the long game on how to get the Darksaber and rule Mandalore. But then when she started, and like how she didn't tell Din about the Mythosaur, like at first I thought it was because like it was powerful information, so she was keeping it to herself. But after she spoke to the Armorer, did she say it like that to Din because she was just like, hey man, I'm tripping.
I think so.
Did you see anything down there?
Yeah, like, I think so.
But do you agree with my, like how it first came across to then with the extra episodes? Like, did you think she was keeping it secret from Din because she's, like, bad?
It wasn't necessarily that she's bad. I've always felt that, you know,
she was in it for herself sort of thing.
Yeah, like, I've always felt that, you know, obviously she has a desire to rule Mandalore. That's why she wanted the Darksaber.
We all do, Hawes.
Yeah,
we
of course. Do. But I feel I legitimately do think that sort of the overall story, maybe not of this season, but of the show as a whole, is that the Mandalorian race or Mandalorian culture needs to change. Like, it doesn't need to be beholden to these old ass rules in this creed, right? So maybe, you know, I think they have to find some middle ground between like Bo-Katan's way of thinking and the Armorer's way of thinking.
I sort of think that's where, like, that's a really enriching place to go. But in my cynical mindset, I'm like, do these dudes, like, do they have it in them to realize that? Or it's just like, Mando's a sick bro. Seen those Mando mercs? They love us.
I think there's a little bit of that for sure. But I also, I don't, that's the vibe I'm getting from the story thus far, right? Like, I think if that is, I think they have sort of hinted at it sort of subtly, like, you know, in the scene where, so like, you know, I kind of get the vibe that part of the reason Bo-Katan is going along with this is because she feels like accepted, right? Her old homies abandoned her after she couldn't get the Darksaber. This new crew is accepting her. But I think she is noticing the problem with the way they go about being a Mandalorian. And I kind of got that vibe from the scene where she was sitting at the campfire by herself and she took her helmet off.
You're going to love this. Do you know what Bo-Katan, like, you know, joining, you know, a person that's like by themselves, like that's like their, you know, they're real independent, and then they sort of join this, you know, sort of strangish culture and get accepted and then becomes like a important part of it. It reminded me of when Locke joined the marijuana growing group in one of the flashbacks.
Oh my God, what a reference, Steele. This is why we're good friends, buddy. Holy moly, I love you for that. Wow, that was good. Yeah, yeah, I could totally see that, right? Like, I could see the, and that doesn't go well for Locke, remember? He finds out that whole group is not exactly what they're cracked up to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have to think that, okay, so obviously they really spotlighted it in the previously on segment in the very first episode where they replayed the scene of the armorer talking about the prophecy of the, there's a prophecy that the Mythosaur will rise and reunite Mandalore. That's what's going to happen, right? 100%. So I can't help but think that, like, either the armorer is going to have to ease up or there's going to be some sort of conflict that emerges between the two different groups. I don't know.
Do you know what my ultimate hope is? Is that they go, like, it's time for, like, Grogu starts talking and then it's time to, like, whatever, mask up. And that's when Din goes, I don't want this for him.
Yeah.
That would be amazing for me.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool. I could see that being really cool.
I was talking before about how they don't reference, like, it's all references from the past, but they are about to make a recent reference.
What's that?
From good old Book of Boba Fett, we get a angry creature in the middle of the season. And then it helps us save the day in the finale. But this time we've got three of them.
Yep, the birds.
That somehow pop out of that ship. I want a shot. I want a concept shot of them all in that little fighter. That thing's a TARDIS.
I think we're going to see the Mythosaur too. Full on. I don't know,
but
buddy.
I just think, like, the whole, remember, like, in the first seasons, it was like, hey, it's just like when we were playing with our toys, like, you know, in the sandpit. And it's sort of like, yeah, after four seasons, that wears pretty thin. I really think the Book of Boba Fett, that was my tipping point of...
You know what? That's fair. I don't even want to talk about the Book of Boba Fett. Shit. And listen, somebody... I saw a video, and I love when people do this. They'll take all the trailers, right, and trim out just the footage we haven't seen in the show yet and be like, this is everything they haven't shown yet. None of it was Tatooine footage, so they ain't going back to Tatooine. But some of the footage is, you remember the scene of all the Mandos dropping out of the ship, like almost sort of dropping out of the bottom of the ship down on the city?
Yeah, it's all about Grief Town.
Yeah, so if I had to guess, Grief is going to contact Mando because the pirates come back.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, you know, they go and save the day. Because there's also that shot of the little Babu Fricks that we haven't seen yet, too.
Because in the trailer, there's a shot of one of the pirates getting shot down, and there's Mandos in the background, isn't there? It's not from the shootout from episode 2, maybe. Like that shot in the trailer is not the same standoff with Greef Karga and the pirates, is it?
I don't believe so.
I felt like there was like a scene where there was pirates and Mandos on Navarro.
Well, yeah. So watching that scene of them dropping out of the ship, it's clearly Navarro. Like now
got
that
you, yeah.
I've got the visual reference more fresh in my head, it's totally Navarro. And that there's like a big battle that goes on because there's that scene of the two little Babu Fricks looking out the window as somebody gets beat up and going like, hey, hey, or whatever. And then there's a really cool shot of multiple of Bo-Katan style ship, that Mandalorian fighter or whatever, sort of involved in some sort of dogfight too. Those were the ones that sort of stuck out to me when I watched that. So they're going back to Navarro for sure.
All right. So we're sort of towards, I think the second episode's the Mines of Mandalore. Yeah. Am I right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, the second half of that, I quite enjoyed, despite I sort of in my head, I just sort of try to paint R5-D4 with blue accents or something. Just so I can get through it. And then putting him in there, that's a real cramped ride. I hope it's not too far. But everything gets like, and like in that episode, the whole thing of like everything that's not a reference is a projection for what's going to happen. Like when they're flying to Mandalore, Din says to Grogu, that's where Bo-Katan lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Concordia, where I used to live. That's a Star Wars reference. So the Bo-Katan lives close. That's a projection of what's going to happen. That's Concordia. That's a Star Wars reference because that's where Jodo Cast, or, you know, there's all these different histories of Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And they try to like, I actually enjoy the way they blend it all in because there was like a fake Boba. There was a whole, these Dark Horse comics back in the day, they were running roughshod.
They had to do some heavy ass lifting to get all that to match up. And then George Lucas was like, well, actually, he's a clone of a guy named Django. And they were like, Oh, man.
And then he says, as a Mandalorian, you have to know maps and direction. And that projects that Grogu's going to be able to fly the ship somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To Bo-Katan, who just lives close. It's like, that's the scripting. It's all reference or projection.
I gotta say though, and I think this speaks to what, like, one of your, you know, your biggest complaints about the show so far is that creature in the mines, the weird eyeball / droid that socketed into the big spider droid thing. Mm-hmm. Is one of the coolest things they've done in Star Wars in a while. It was so creepy. The way it moved was so unreal. The lighting, the execution of all that was so cool. And maybe that sticks out so much to me because it was something new, right? Like, that is new. Like, you know, maybe does it have a little bit of a vibe of a General Grievous? Maybe, but not really.
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, might be able to do your data bank entry and say it uses the same, you know, whatever technology to what. But that thing, to your point, was like, it was insane. You're watching it and it's like, oh my God, new stuff, mm-hmm. new. Like, oh, I never thought of this. Like, that's why I love it when they show you things that you could never think of.
Yeah.
But it seems like they just think of like, too much. They're thinking of things that
we have
I could
of.
Think of because it's just a mashup. But yeah, that the last half of that one, I thought was pretty dope. Very, very sort of compelling. And I was so happy that it seemed like that might have been the finale, like that he gets to the waters. But just like, thank God, Bath Quest is over. Because it bums me out because it's like, your quest, it's stupid.
Yeah.
Like, who cares if you've been in the... Like, it's all... Like, it's just cult talk. Like, you've got to bathe in the waters to be forgiven for taking your helmet off. It's like, what?
Oh, and that's like, can I also
Be smarter, hero of the show.
Something that just popped in my head. It's fucking weird that not a single person in that covert has been like, hey, man, nice Darksaber. I know what that means. Like, Din is just walking around like a regular-ass Mandalorian, and he's got this Darksaber that's supposed to be this ultimate symbol, right, of the leadership of Mandalore. And nobody, like, nobody's tried to get it. Nobody's mentioned it. He's used it once. Like, it's so weird to me that it's...
Didn't he almost kill Paz Vizsla for it in Book of Boba Fett?
Yeah. Yeah, the Paz Vizsla challenged him for it, remember? And, like, yeah, it's so weird that he's got this thing that's such a big deal and nobody seems to care.
Yeah, because they're too busy referencing shit from 30 years ago.
it's just so weird.
But it is. They do write to convenience. And that's one of, like, their styles is... They'll give you, like, the Pershing thing. Like, what was that? Was that the third episode?
Uh-huh.
And then, like, then we just don't... Like, they don't mesh all the storylines together. It's written so much like a comic book in, like, even in the fact that, like, Marvel, for a while, every fourth episode would be a flashback to Obi-Wan Kenobi's diary or something, and it would just be like a separate thing. And whereas, say, you know, you watch like, you know, high standard, but Succession, and like all the storylines are ongoing. Like it's like back to this, then back to this. They don't, they really don't write the story at it like that at all. And I guess it's a choice, but it seems like the most basic way out rather than integrating all the stories through like Moff Gideon, like, do you know what I mean? It's like, you've got this amazing villain and how many more episodes have we got?
Four.
We've seen episode four. It's eight episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think they do that last season or the season before where the Moff Gideon was only in like the last three episodes or something.
They've done that every season. Like Moff Gideon shows up late in the first season. He's in the second one a little bit more. Cause which episode is the tragedy where the Dark Troopers capture Baby Yoda and Boba Fett shows up and is real cool for a few minutes. Yeah, I think that was like maybe the fifth episode of that season. Yeah, he always shows up late in the season, and unless it's like a budgetary thing or Giancarlo Esposito is not available all the time thing, there's no excuse for it otherwise, because he should be featured in it way more.
Yeah, it is weird that there's no villain in the show.
No. I mean, we know who the villain is. We know it's Moff Gideon. But, like, the fact that he is not a presence other than a couple of seemingly throwaway lines is definitely weird.
So that was... What was that one called?
Oh, I can't remember the names of the episodes.
Unter Eve?
No.
Unter Eve?
The Mind of Mandalore. And then the third one was... was Coruscant and Din and Bo getting redeemed at the end.
Got you. I liked the you know, and it was sort of like as you watched it, you could sort of make the leap. It was like, oh my god, Bo-Katan inadvertently got redeemed.
Yeah.
Really quite interesting. It was sort of like you accidentally got into the nightclub, so you're like, oh,
I guess I'll stay.
I don't want to leave. I wasn't planning on getting into this nightclub, but it's pretty banging.
Yeah.
So yeah, so she drags him out in that one, and then that's when the TIE fighters, TIE interceptors, and they bomb
her castle,
the palace, yeah. And then it goes to Pershing, which I've got some qualms, but the whole thing, like the stuff that like people that I felt like a lot of people didn't like about it, I really enjoyed. Although I complain about the stop-start storyline, like this one was very interesting. But
yeah.
But then now they've introduced it, and then on the next episode, they don't mention it again. Like they left him on a cliffhanger, and now I'm still on the cliff sort of thing. It's sort of, yeah, there's no sort of continuity to the serialization.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like this dramatic thing happens. I can't believe it. What's going to happen next? Yeah, you'll see him in a while. That's sort of like comic book cliffhanger with no satisfying follow-up is... It sort of bugs me. But the whole thing... I was a bit confused about why he was giving the TED talk about genetics when he's banned from...
Doing it.
And also is just moved into his, like they scheduled his TED talk before he even got an apartment.
Yeah. So my guess is that is like a, what's the word? A ceremonial, not a ceremonial, but it's kind of like a puff piece, right? It's like, hey, look how good we're doing at reintegrating these former Imperials into Republic society. It's like them foolishly patting themselves on the back. Like, look, this guy, look at the crazy stuff he was up to for the Empire, and now look at him.
There's one plot point in this that I thought everyone would be over, but I just don't hear any discussion about it.
Is this him lying in his tell?
Pershing's mum did not die of something that needed cloning. That's a made-up story.
I saw this. I saw you doing this theory on Twitter. I saw this.
Dude, it's not a theory. It's they've told you. These guys are quite... Like, they're easy-to-read writers. So... For everyone, so I'm watching it, right? We're at the TED Talk. Fascinating. One might argue that they only had the TED Talk like this because it was Star Wars reference because they're in the Opera House.
Well, but, I think that's an appropriate venue to hold such an event.
But it was so... It was made such a thing of when he's talking, and just before he starts talking about his sob story about how, oh, my mum could have been saved by cloning, but, you know, we didn't have the technology and that's why I want to do it. He pauses and then awkwardly rubs his ear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I, at first, especially because I've forgotten her name. Is her name in real life Katie, I think?
Yes. I can't remember that character's name either.
But the double agent from Moff Gideon, who was on Moff Gideon's ship and who's now, you know, working with the Resistance or the Rebellion or the New Republic. But because she was just walking in at that time. And I, before, you know, on watching it the first time, I knew that wasn't there for no reason. And I thought it was a signal to Imperials that might be watching that he's like it was some signal that like, I'm here for you. Like I'm an active agent or something. Do you know what I mean? That's how I took it. So I was sort of like, oh yeah, there's something going on with this. And then he has the interview with the robot and he's asked the question, have you had any ill feelings against the New Republic? And he says, no. And it goes on. Then he finds out he's not allowed to continue his research. And he finds that very frustrating. And, you know, the Katie, double agent Katie, we'll call her, she is sort of fanning the flames and stuff. And then he has the next interview and he's asked the same question. And he is frustrated. He has had bad feelings.
Right. He's,
like, he wants to continue his research. And before he answers, he rubs his ear. And then he lies and says, no, I haven't. That's not a theory, buddy. That's a clue red.
Buddy, that is... Do you remember the James Bond movie where... what's her name? Felicity Jones, what's her name in Star Wars?
In Rogue One? Jyn Erso.
Jyn Erso, where Jyn Erso's dad has a poker tell where one of his eyes starts bleeding. Do you remember that? Like, that's his tell, is his eye starts bleeding.
Jesus.
Now,
I think
that,
it's a tell that your eyes are bleeding.
Yeah, I gotta say that, but rubbing your ear is a way better tale. I'm when we get done here, I'm rewatching that episode.
I just don't see how, I thought it was like, there'd be, like, I'd go online and there'd be like 100 memes.
Well, you know what this is? You got to start making the memes.
I'm busy.
Yeah, I know.
Once I'll show you, I've got to film some stuff in the shop. And once you see how many pictures I have,
buddy,
framed and mounted in a pattern, like on three walls of my store. People are coming in now, right? And they're like, how long's this shop been here for? And I'm like, oh, we moved about 9 months ago. And they're just like, oh, really? Because it looks like it's been there for like 20 years.
Buddy.
Because it's so dense.
The pictures I have seen that you've been posting on your stories and stuff, it looks really cool. It looks really cool.
Thank you, Horace.
Cool. Did you get your Star Wars skate deck prints put up?
Oh, mate. Wait till you see them.
Oh, they're not up yet, but they're going up.
No, they're up.
Oh, okay.
They're framed. I cropped them into the shape because they were sort of like a reproduction of a board graphic.
Right.
But the print that they were on was a lot wider.
Right. It was
the
more
border was wider than the board. Yeah. And then I found these because it was really hard to get frames that size, that skateboard width. And the best bet is to get a, you know, those frames that you can put like five little photos in.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you use them as one big glass frame, right?
Yeah. You just take out the matting.
Yeah, so I got them cropped into this shape. And so they're almost like the perfect shape of a 90s skateboard. And yeah, they're, wait to you, it looks It's good.
Good.
It's good, buddy.
Hell yeah.
But what were we discussing? I couldn't make memes. Oh, because of the ear rub. Yeah, the ear rub. Like, so, yeah, I'm not sure where Pershing's coming from. Because he's obviously, like, he's possessed by unlocking the power sort of thing. And my read of him is that he's nor good or evil. He's so obsessed with making this breakthrough that he doesn't care if it's like he'll just lie to himself or anyone else. Like, I'm not sure if he
realizes
knows it's evil,
right?
Or he's like, everyone thinks it's evil, but I am going to use it for good. But I think he's just like
obsessed.
He's what what's his name warned us about. Jeff Goldblum, Jurassic Park 1.
Okay.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should. What is his line?
I can't remember. I'm so dumb. I was about to say
the Spider-Man line.
With great power comes great responsibility.
No, he said...
Your scientists were so obsessed with if they could... That or something.
They didn't ask if they should. Or
something
like
to that effect.
It's wordplay with could and should. But yeah, I'm not sure if that's his. And it's his obsession with like cracking it. Like that makes him evil because he's open to be co-opted by evil people that will help him unlock it.
Right.
You know, kind of like the, you know, dudes that worked on the atomic bomb and all that. They were just like, let's, you know, some anyway. It's like, let's unlock the atomic power. And then afterwards, I think, I'm not sure if I'm just making this up. Afterwards, some of them were just like, yeah, probably shouldn't have done that, bros.
Yeah.
Your Jyn Erso types. Not your Jyn Erso, your...
Galen Erso.
Daddy Erso. Oh, God. I watched... Rogue One a couple weeks ago because my mum, bless her little cotton socks, she recorded it onto her DVR because it was on TV.
Oh.
And she said, I taped this Star Wars movie for you when you got home to watch. And it was quite a trip because it was on network television, but it was obviously sponsored by Disney to promote Andor, uh-huh. which was about to come out on Disney Plus. So there's all these ads in it for, like, Andor, but it hadn't started yet, so it's still, like, all the mystery sort of, you know, it's, like, a little bit without context.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really, it was really quite cool to watch. And, yeah, it's a good movie. A bit patchy, but
it's solid.
Pretty good. It definitely reminded me of a different time.
Boy,
like just
it.
in our lives.
Yeah, exactly.
Like thinking about Jeddah and the knocked over Jedi thing and Saw Gerrera and oh man. Very different. I feel on so many different levels.
On so many different levels, dude. So many.
Sheesh. From global to local.
Yep.
Yeah, that was good fun. So we got the Pershing app, and I did enjoy. Like, I loved seeing Coruscant after Return of the Jedi.
Me too.
I loved all the filler things they did. It was very interesting. I thought it was pretty questionable, just odd. Like, and I guess it's that whole, some people, I don't know whether it's implied or not. You know, some people like imply things, they add weight. I haven't even got to what I'm talking about, but how they named them all like L27.
Right, right.
It's sort of like, doesn't seem like a good PR move.
Yeah, it seems like It seems
it's quite demeaning.
Yeah, it kind of strips like them of their humanity and just like it's the exact same thing they do to Finn. He's known as FN2187.
Now, and then you'll have, you know, people that write, oh, that shows that the New Republic hasn't, like, and I don't like happenstance implications, like, where it's like, you're doing some headcanon on this bad boy. Like, I'm fascinated to know if they did that, like...
intentionally?
Yeah.
I like, have to feel like they saying did.
Okay. I don't have much trust, Hawes, at the moment.
I get it. Me neither. But not related to much of Star Wars.
Understandable. A few bits in that, I was just like, come on, guys. Tighten it up. One of which, one that I'm just like, oh yeah, whatever, it's fine, it's a show. So there's a trillion people on this planet, right?
Uh-huh.
Which is just mind-boggling. What is a trillion? Is it a million billion? Like, yeah. A billion's a shit ton of numbers.
Yeah, I think a trillion is like after a billion, right? It goes million, billion, trillion.
So it's like 1,000 billion.
Yes.
That's a lot of billions, man.
It sure is.
Anyway, that was from the J.J. Abrams school of, like, just say it's a lot bigger. But that's just me. Anyway, so they're on that planet, trillion people, right? They're at one of the most unique tourist attractions on the trillion person planet, and it seems like just a Tuesday morning at the mall level of people strolling around.
Right.
Now, I'm not sure if you've been to any tourist attractions. Like, I'm sure if you go to your Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if it's it'll be that sparse, but that's just a little. A minor gripe about the tourist attraction.
That's
I would put that down to an overthink. But
remind me to bring that rock back up when we get to the next episode, because there's something that happened in the next episode that got the biggest eye roll out of me yet.
The return of the rock.
Yep.
It's not going to happen in the DC universe.
It's sure not. It sure isn't.
What a goose. I love the story and like the stuff how people hated how it was, like, they were saying it was filler and just whatever. Like, I was like, it was fascinating for me to, like, I loved all that stuff. Because it's, like, in this area that I'm so, like, fascinated with. Because it's, you know, that comes from your childhood ponderings. The bit where they jumped off the train, super fan film.
Oh, yeah.
Like...
yeah.
They don't... like, they are just... like, that Pershing, he doesn't seem like the most athletic dude in the world. And, like, a train... like, I'm pretty sure a space train would go so fast, and then, like, it didn't look like it was just like it was about to stop at the station. It was like that.
Uh-oh. Hey, you cut out for a second.
Oh, but yeah, that was a suicide jump.
Yeah,
like no. And it was, yeah, the whole pacing of that, the no ticket thing was, it just seemed off.
Why didn't they just get tickets?
It seemed like, it seemed like one of those odd, and, you know, I try never to speak ill of, but it seemed like one of those really oddly filmed Obi-Wan Kenobi running action scenes. It was just, Anyway, so they jump off. You've got these Star Destroyers there. There's, like, absolutely no security at all, which just seems, I don't know. I sort of felt like a discarded Star Destroyer, like just a, what it represents, would be guarded.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So anyway, there's that. Then the mind probe.
Right. The mind wipe.
Yeah. Oh, and just to the whole thing about how the dialogue, it's always about something that's happened before or happening in the future. So in that dialogue where they're all having their little, they're talking about the, like, oh, what do you guys miss? Mm-hmm. All right. So that's a plot point, the cookies. And then they say, oh, Moff Gideon. And they go, I heard he got mind probed. So it, or mind, what do they call it?
I heard they hooked him up to a mind flayer.
Yeah. So they introduce a mind flayer and then they put forward the, oh no, I heard he escaped. And it's like they introduce the mind flayer for later on in the episode. I'm not saying it's like good or bad, but I'm just saying like it's quite easy to like read the dialogue. Like they really jam it with that sort of like everything's either a reference or a projection sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that mind flare thing, so you've got this experimental just made legal mind probing gear, you're gonna use it, you turn it on. Immediately, your decision as a doctor is to just bail.
Right.
I'm out of here. We're doing experimental brain surgery on this dude, but we're just going to go. There's no, like, heart monitor that tells us something's, like, going wrong. Because, obviously, his body's under far more stress than it was when the mind flare was on level 2 or whatever.
Right.
But it's like, oh, you're going to hang out? All right. Well, here's, don't touch that dial. Like that is implausible to me. Like, do you hear that and you go, oh, dude, you're just nuts. Like,
no,
am I nuts?
I get it, but to me, that is a bit of the, like, general suspense of disbelief that you got to go with watching
no,
just about anything.
No, write it better!
That's fair.
It's just so, like, you spend all your time coming up with these references. That's what you do once you've got your plot down. Then you do your references.
Fair.
Yeah, that, I was just like, that just does not make any sense. Like, how does not a sensor go off? Like, do you know what I mean? If you're in a hospital and something dramatically changes with your body, nurses come running.
Right.
Mate, I say this as someone that's played an orderly, a paramedic, and a doctor in the background of Grey's Anatomy, all right?
Sheesh.
I think I know what I'm talking about.
That's good, buddy. That's real good. You know, my mom's going to hear that and she's going to go, was Steele really in Grey's Anatomy? Because my mom and my sister love that show.
Well, Mrs. Burkhart, I've got news for you. My buttocks are in, I don't know what episode it was, episode 3 maybe, but you can check my Instagram. I am coming up. It's funny here because a lot of those shows are on Disney Plus.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so I never get to, like, you know, I don't have you know, cable or whatever back home. So I sort of haven't checked in to like chase up all my little background, because I love the screenshots. They're hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I was at Jackie's mum's house and she's got Disney Plus. And yeah, they've got, because that whole Stars thing, I think it's sort of like in Australia, it's pretty much like Hulu and Disney Plus are together on right. Disney Plus. So they had, yeah, Grey's Anatomy. And there was a couple more episodes that hadn't screened yet that I was going to be in the background of. And there was another one. What did they have? But they didn't get up to my episode yet. Oh, no. There was one that did. That Not Dead Yet. That was on Disney Plus. But in America, it's on Hulu, I believe.
Okay.
So there you go. So, yeah, but I can give your mum some juicy behind the scenes Grey's Anatomy gossip if she wants. Just get at me in my DMs, Hawes's mum. yeah, nothing untoward. All right, so there's that episode, and then it goes. So it ended on the mind flare.
Mm-hmm.
That was the cliffhanger. So now we're up to episode 4, yeah?
Yeah.
The Foundling.
Right.
Now listen. I connect with the Mandalorian on many levels, but like my deep emotional attachment is and you know, pardon the cliche, but as a father. That's
right.
Like the whole like I talked. God, I'm dropping big bombs here today. I had a great discussion with the great man, Carl Weathers himself, about what his line about at the end, I think, of season one, where he goes, I think Den says he's going to look after him and whatever. But then Carl Weathers says to him, you might find out he looks after you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, and Harry does look after me. So I like, even as a, you know, he just like his joy, you know, looks after me, especially like, you know, during COVID and all that. It was, you know, so to have this like little fun dude that he didn't know about, you know, COVID or anything like that, or, you know, who was running the country and all stuff. Like he was just like, who's running the playground, buddy? Let's go.
Right.
Although we couldn't go on the playground, so it probably doesn't work. But we made our own playground in the trees next to the park. Anyway, so, yeah, so as, like, that's my, you know, like, real, like, connection with the characters sort of thing that will, you know, bring me to tears sort of thing, because it just sort of, it's like a sci-fi version. It's a really glorified sci-fi version of me and Harry going down the street. But, you know, we don't have monsters or whatever. We've just got like a busker or something, someone asking for some money out the front of 7-Eleven. That's about as rough as it gets. But,
right.
You know, when you've got your imagination on, that guy asking for $2, he's a four-eyed Gorex or something. I don't know. But anyway, these Mandalorians, we've got to report them to some sort of galactic agency about childcare.
Yeah, they're really pushing the limits of appropriate babysitting.
Mate, you've got a cave. Stay in the cave.
Mm-hmm.
Like that beach. It no good. Let's just constantly stand in the spot where multiple giant creatures eat us. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I definitely think at the start of that episode they bad volume use with all those Mandalorians just. Like, it seemed dangerous. Like, it seemed like they're having their little fights shooting at each other, but it's like, hey, man, there's someone just behind that person. So if they duck, it's going to get them, isn't it? Like, it just seemed like, it was just this orgy of Mandalorianism visuals, but it kind of was just like, oh, okay. So you're shooting stuff out into the water where the giant crocodile comes out of. It seems like an interesting training exercise. But anyway, and then the bird comes, takes a little kid, and they're like, oh.
Again.
He always gets away. Like, that line was, like, I was sort of just like, oh, another bloody, like, that beach spot is really, you know, cursed with giant creatures. And then they throw in a line of, like, they always get away. And it's just like, how many kids have you lost to this bird? At least one, because there was a Mandalorian helmet in the nest. But they just seem, and I've had some people on Twitter come at me with, like, yeah, that's how they toughen them up and, like, make them Mandalorians. Like, why do they go looking for them there? Like if that's the whole point, okay, that was a weak one. We've weeded him out. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, no, is he going to have this, right, this harsh, like, instead of risking everyone's life to go get him again, why don't we just keep the training a bit more less giant monster getting them? Like, mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? If they just went, all right, yep, that's one less, everyone. Survival of the fittest here at Mandalore. But, yeah, how do you feel about the Death Beach?
I just, buddy, I saw it and I was like, I want to go to Mandalorian summer camp. That looks pretty fun, minus the monsters. I don't understand.
And you know what it looked like? It looked like a skate park with like 200 kids trying to skate it at once.
I wondered what the point of, like, why are so many of those dudes shooting into the water? Like, what is that? What is the point of just standing there and firing off randomly into the water?
Yeah, it just seems like a waste of ammo in these, like, do you know what I mean? You're like this hidden tribe, and I'd imagine your resources are pretty slim, but it seems like they're not. Yeah, that just seemed like just a real toss of just like, Mandalorians, look at them. And then it's sort of like, yeah, it sort of seems pointless. Like, it would have, like, you know, if I was in the room, and at the end of the day, my point is that I should be. you know, maybe just make it that it was like everyone was sitting around or standing around watching the kid trials or something. It just seems like it was not like it was sort of one of those visual things that if you thought about at all, you'd be like, oh, this is very pointless sort of thing. But yeah, anyway, the whole, yeah, so just how badly they look after their children is quite upsetting to me. And even if your son is taken, could you imagine, right?
Bro, I ain't camping out. I'm not camping out. If a giant pterodactyl came down and took my cat, Walter, there's not a camping trip happening. Like, I'm going to the pterodactyl nest that day.
Like, I'm sort of like open that people can sort of, you know, a few of my complaints, they can maybe go, oh, but it's, you know, you can just massage it in their head and do you know what I mean? And make it fit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing, I don't think so, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's nothing in the dialogue that would suggest the bird wouldn't go straight back to the nest and feed the kid to the birds. Did they say they only eat in the morning, or is there something like that bizarre?
I can't remember. Like, I remember, you know, Bo-Katan saying, like, them telling Bo-Katan, well, if you go up there with the ship, you'll spook it and it'll kill the child. It's happening.
Yeah, I know they. Yeah, they did a lot of work about why they
just didn't fly there.
Just fly there. Yeah, because of the vibrations or whatever. Obviously, they can't detect a campfire. But anyway, so this Paz Vizsla, right? He pretty much on the way to the hospital stopped to get some juji fruits.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like my Seinfeld reference? Come on, buddy.
Buddy, I haven't seen that episode of Seinfeld. I haven't seen a lot of Seinfeld. We've been through this before, and I get to re-register your disappointment in me all over again.
It's like 50 first dates.
Yep. You remember when you sent me your Golden Boy shirt? And I was like, I'm sorry, buddy. It's a cool shirt, but I don't get the reference. And you were like, oh my God.
So Elaine's at the cinema about to see a movie. She's going to meet her boyfriend or something. And I think she gets a message that the boyfriend's in hospital. And before she goes to rush off to the hospital, she goes to, because she's so hungry, she goes to the concession stand and gets some juji fruits.
Okay.
And then when she's like, gets to the hospital and she's like, I rushed straight here, but she's got the juji fruits in her hand. and the boyfriend's like, when did you buy those juji fruits? And she's like, oh, after, like, and it's sort of like he breaks up with her because it's like, you bought juji fruits before coming to see if I was dead or alive.
Mm-hmm.
And, Paz Vizsla, I just got to have a nap and a bit of a, like, it makes, like, if that's your son, like, and I know, like, they had the reveal and stuff, and I know that was sort of like a theorized thing, but it just...
How do you sleep?
Like, if that's your... Yeah, how do you, like... Let's keep going, bros.
Like, how do you...
The bird, like, just happens to turn up at that exact... Like, it times out. Like, what was the bird doing with this kid all this time? Where did he keep... Well, what was the bird doing? What was the bird doing, Horse?
I don't know, buddy. Will's theory is that maybe the bird was out hunting for other food, too. That one little Mando boy wasn't enough for all those baby birds.
There's a gas leak in Will's house. I heard him go on about that. I'm like, oh, buddy. I love you. I love you, you know, your positive outlook and always sort of looking on the bright side of life. But come on, buddy. Sometimes you just gotta take it on the chin and just wonder, what was the bird doing? Like, I don't know. Like, do you know what I mean? They have, you know, because birds in real life do that. Like, you know, they cough up food into other birds' little mouths.
Uh-huh.
Do they wait 12? I don't know. Does that happen in nature where they get the worm and then they fly it around for half a day? Then they take it? It's just, like, it's just weak. Very weak.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know. I don't know enough about birds. Birds are a subject that I'm not well read on, you know? Now, if it was a giant raccoon, I would have, you know, things to add to the conversation.
Oh, we should have added this at the start of the podcast, Hawes, but it's a bit hard now because we've gone for so long. We should have added in a thing where you could tweet me at what minute in the podcast you turned it off because you got sick of me complaining. this series has gaslit me. I feel like I'm like, am I crazy? What did the bird do? You know, and they had to get in the whole plot thing about the fire or whatever, but have the camp on the way back.
Wait. Yeah, right.
So what did they do? They flew to a certain spot.
Yeah.
And then they, because they came back in the ship.
Okay. Right. Well, and then after the bird got, there's always a bigger fish from the Phantom mm-hmm. Menace. Then I guess they were able to just fly the ship up to the nest at that point and pick up the baby birds.
Gotcha. Which seems odd.
I mean, at the very least, they're going to have a hell of a rotisserie chicken night at the Mandalorian cave.
Do you know what would have been sweet? If, like, Bo-Katan, they left the birds up there, and Bo-Katan would just, like, in her ship, just, like, drop off little alligators to them once a day.
Yeah, Bo-Katan would go and baby bird the baby birds.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, and then they'd think that her ship was like their mom.
Oh, see? That's a good idea.
Well, that's why I should be in the room. Imagine, like, the ship and then the three birds behind.
I think we might get that, buddy.
I don't know. I reckon they're going to be riding them.
Yeah, yeah. Behind Bo's ship, though.
Yeah, but we had the riding.
Yeah.
We rode last season.
Bro, there's riding left to do. They're going to be riding those birds. They're going to be riding the Mythosaur. They're going to be riding a Dewback, probably. I don't know. A Ronto.
And then I guess in there we had the flashback. Because whenever the armorer starts banging those hammers,
there's something in that living water.
Woof. Some member berries.
Yep.
Now, I'm very conflicted on this flashback scene, Hawes.
Yeah, I know. This is one of the few things we actually talked about a little bit before, like, when the episode aired.
Now, I sort of have to hold my brakes on this because I want to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
But a big part of it hinges on this for me. Do you think we see Ahmed Best again as the Jedi?
Yes.
This season?
No. But I think there's more story to tell because he's not with old Keller and Beck when we first see him in the first episode of Mando, so something happened.
I wish they'd follow up with it this season. If they never follow up on it again, I'm furious.
Yeah, me too. Because that, like, to me, it does raise some interesting storyline potential, right? Like, okay, I get it. I get that it's like a reference within a reference within a reference to have him escape on the Naboo starfighter, the Naboo troopers and stuff, but to me that has interesting story potential, right? What is at this point, what is Grogu's connection to Naboo post Order 66? Is that where he hides out for a little while? Do him and Keller and Beck hide out on Naboo for a little bit? You know what I mean? Like, to me there's potential there for something interesting.
Let me ask you this. And you'd have to, like, you know, write a little, you know, sort of, you know, massage it in so it makes sense. Would you rather, what's his name, Kellen Beck?
Kellen Beck.
Kellen Beck have saved Grogu or Jar Jar Binks?
Jar Jar.
At the moment, I'm Jar Jar.
Yeah. And look, I was just going to say, like, this is me also saying, like, I want to add, I think, like, him fighting with the two lightsabers, sick. The design of his Jedi robes, immediately stood out to me and looked sick. Like, I think everything about that character is cool, but do you know, like, the pop it got out of me when it was Ahmed Best was huge. Do you know the pop it would have gotten out of me if it was Jar Jar Binks? Like, I'd be walking around my house right now, beaming.
See, if it was Jar Jar Binks, and he got in the Naboo Star Cruiser, and it was never followed up on, I'd be like, oh, all right, that was a heavy Star Wars reference, but it was like, it sort of like, you know, it added to the Jar Jar Binks story.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I'm hoping it's followed up on, because I just, the fact that, like, hey, you know, like all the articles, oh, we found out who it's this, and it's like this, like it was such an important plot point that was like left secret and hinted at and stuff. If the answer to the mystery is like Star Wars in joke, it's like, oh.
Yeah, and buddy, I really don't believe, I think for sure there's more story to tell there. And I think we will see it. I think they'll drip feed it to us like they do just about everything else.
Yeah, well, that's why I find that the drip feeding quite sort of frustrating. Because it's...
Me too.
It's like you're watching three different, like, so you go from the parent, the doctor episode, and then you've got this judge, and then like none of these characters are coming back.
Right.
Like four episodes, do you know what I mean? You're left on a cliffhanger, and then it's like, well, like, I guess by episode 8, I'll find out when, you know, like any other show, like what the cliffhanger from the previous episode would feed the next episode, but it just doesn't happen here.
Yeah. Or if you're a situation like network TV, like Lost or something, you would at least get it. There's a high chance it would be addressed again that season, right? It may not be the next episode, but there's a good chance it would get at least expanded on.
Yeah, but I would say I'll stop you. I feel, even though we had all the different, like the flashback, like the flashbacks
had might a continuum, not get
followed up on, right? But the present day story would always be continuing, and what was revealed in the flashbacks would feed into that character.
Right.
Like, my question is, like, Grogu had this flashback. Is he going to, like, now that he's remembered it, is it going to affect the way he acts at all? And if so, how?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question. I think that's a fair question. Like,
all it is like the puppet makes cute faces as he remembers, but it's like, but he's remembered. How does that character change? Like what's his, yeah, it's just, keep talking.
So I have a similar frustration with this show right now, and that's like, stop it. Stop beating around the bush with the cloning and the Snoke and the Palpatine. We know that's what you guys are hinting at. There's no need to keep being like, come on, isn't that interesting? Cloning. Oh, there's guys in vats in this episode. Like, I'm tired of it. Like, just go ahead and establish that. Why keep it a secret?
I hear on some pods where people love, like, they're like, oh, that Filoni knows how to toy with the audience. And it's like, cut the crap. Like, it's, let's just bite into it.
Yeah, because we know, right? Like, there, if that's not the explanation for the cloning and all that, then it's ridiculous. Like, that's what it is. And the fact that they want to just keep being like, ha ha ha, what's all this? Oh, we mentioned cloning a whole lot. What could this possibly mean? Just cut the shit, get to it. You know, like, because by the way, I'm way into to that idea of seeing that project and stuff, you know, in it, in the process. I just stop hinting at it. There's no need to hint at it anymore. It's very clear.
All right. So Ahmed Best is revealed. I would have preferred a single saber. I don't to like me watching it, and I like I will state this, right? I have to do this first. Pause. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
I need to have a bubble of trust.
Okay.
Around this topic, because I've purposely not commented about the Ahmed Best Jedi thing, because I like love the dude, and like he got maligned so heavily that like you don't have to tweet everything that you think. Do you know what I mean? Like if it could be like co-opted to some negative thing, sometimes it's better not to. So like the whole thing of him, you know, getting this role and being celebrated, like love it so much. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the way it was filmed, the way the shots lingered and zoomed and stuff, it wasn't shot like a Jedi was saving Grogu. It was shot like a cameo is saving Grogu. Like it was, like it kept, I just feel like if it was someone else, like say if it was like Bo-Katan saving Grogu, you know, do you know what I mean? Just whatever. Like if it was a different sort of scene, I just don't think the shots would have lingered and be framed like that. And it just, I think I'm like super sensitive to it. But do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I mean, listen, it was definitely filmed like a reference. I get that. Now, that didn't bother me. The quality of the effects on him, of him on that speeder bike, that was kind of rough, well, in my opinion.
Well, that I think that was sort of like the product of, like, got to make sure everyone knows it's him. Like, but it did look like he went to, like, Universal Studios and he went on, like, a thing that makes you, it looks like you're in E.T. flying on the bike or something. It looked like, you know, it didn't look like it was made by the same production that made the crazy birds flying around all over. Like, it just, it looked like a fan film.
Mm-hmm.
Bad. And then with that whole thing of, anyway, I was talking about these lightsabers. Again, we're in the circle of trust. And I feel like just talking about it on a podcast, like, do you know what I mean? It's like, these are just my, like, I feel like what we say on here sort of just stays on here sort of thing, rather than if you tweet an opinion and then someone tries to make out that you're a, you know, trying to be horrible or whatever. So that's why I need the circle of trust. Do we have the circle of trust laws or not?
Oh, I think so. I believe so.
All right. I don't want you Catherine Neans to turn on me, start posting up audio files of, you know, misquoting me. Just chill out, Catherine. She's listening right now. I go, ooh.
She's like, Jesus. Why did I get a drive-by?
Because we love a Neen reference. That's
true.
Do people that do podcasts about podcasts, he just leans into the Neen references too heavily. Never. It looked like when he had the two lightsabers, like the first time he picked up a lightsaber in 3 years was 10 minutes before filming that scene.
I could see a little bit of the choreography being a little awkward. But I thought other parts of it were really good.
Yeah. And I sort of thought it's sort of easier to look like you know what you're doing with one lightsaber than with two. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you've got one lightsaber, you can sort of like, you know, mimic, you know, the classic poses and stuff. But I feel like if you've got two, you actually have to have a bit of the prowess about you and have some actual physical skills moving around weapons.
Yeah, I get that. Now
and then, oh, sorry, you go.
So, you know, that's that character, Kelleran Beck, was originated in that game show, right? Jedi Temple Trials, Jedi Temple Challenge. I can't remember what the name was.
I thought it was on Wheel of Fish.
Ah, okay. No.
Do you know Wheel of Fish?
No, I do not. Is that another Seinfeld reference?
No, that's a reference from Weird Al Yankovic's UHF.
Oh, my God. You get to drink from the fire hose?
Yes.
Ah. So I can't remember. I mean, I definitely watched some of that show. I can't remember if that was like established lore for that character, that he was a dual wielding Jedi, or if it was kind of like an Attack of the Clone situation where, hey, there's a bunch of dead Jedi around here. I'm going to grab an extra saber. You know, the stuff is really hitting the fan.
Yeah, I just thought he would have had a better chance of looking more capable. Like, I feel like they went for too much. Much like whenever Grogu does a flip. Like, even if a baby Yoda Jedi doing a flip, like it actually in real life would just look like a puppet getting thrown across the room. Maybe because it does just look like a puppet getting thrown across the room, just avoid doing that a little bit. Because it does look like I'm sort of just like, someone's just chucked a puppet across a blue screen for this. It's woohoo! But conversely, I was always a fan of the Yoda jump around scene that a lot of people did not like.
Yeah, me
at
too.
The end of Attack of the Clones. But I feel like it is, because I feel like they do it practically or something, and like they're practically throwing a puppet across the room.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we all love seeing the practical aliens, right? Like, do you remember sitting in the theater watching The Force Awakens the first time and you saw, like, you know, the big lumbering creature that the guy that's trying to capture BB-8 is riding? Remember in Rey, in like just being like, holy crap, that's a real
the
thing.
Beast.
Yeah, yeah. And then the weird thing that pops his head up out of the sand and says Kojima and all that. Like, do you remember how refreshing that is? Well, you know what? Sometimes the practical stuff looks a little weird.
Pause.
Yeah.
Do you remember when I was on Tatooine and there was a little alligator-headed alien standing next to me?
I sure do.
And a chittery-eyed homeless man on the ground. Mate, the practical creatures are very, very special to me. Don't worry about that. But I totally get what you mean. Yeah, it just seems a bit odd. But God, they've got the, I'm trying to force myself not to just, you know, it's easy just to, like, you remember the things that, like, nodded you. But the actual puppeteering on that Grogu
is top-notch most of the time.
Oof. Jesus. The faces and stuff. It is quite exceptional, especially when you think back to the old school, like, Yoda puppet and stuff. It's pretty special. But the jumps there, especially the needless jump, like the jump out of the N1 to Pelly, it was sort of just like, oh. But it did give her the chance to say, who taught him that? And you're like, oh.
Well.
It was Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker. Yep.
It's a whole thing. And then
they don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it.
Minutes later, she's trying to throw Boba Fett under the bus. Get out of here, Pelly.
God, that.
Yeah, Steele and I have had two communications about episodes of The Mandalorian since the last time we recorded. I sent him a text that just said, I can't believe they name-dropped Boba Fett and didn't show him. And then we had a brief back and forth about the quality of the effects, not the scene or Ahmed Best's involvement in it, but the quality of the effects in him riding that speeder bike on Coruscant.
So I'm sort of holding out. If it was all just like a cheap thrill, like, and that was the answer to that mystery, like, I don't know. Like, I do see a lot of fans that, like, that's like, it's not an issue because it's like Ahmed Best and stuff, but it just seems like a cop out. If it's just like a cameo, like such a meta cameo is the answer to that mystery. I'm sort of like,
I don't think that is.
Well, that's good. Especially like, because I thought it was just like a once-off sort of flashback.
No,
That's how I took it while I was watching it, and I was sort of just like, oh, you know, and then the effects. And then when it was a Naboo, like, royal ship or whatever, I was just like, AI is writing this for sure. Oh, it has buddy. To be.
Do you want, I don't know that you, if you know this, but this, I'm almost afraid to tell you this as we get close to wrapping this up, but that ship that he leaves on, that's Jar Jar's ship. I saw people pulling screenshots from some of the Jar Jar episodes of Clone Wars and comparing them, and it definitely seems to be Jar Jar's ship.
Got you. Oh, because I was trying to think, like, when did Jar Jar have a ship in, like, Revenge of the Sith, but in the cartoon? Yeah, I don't know. I just, the whole meta-ness, I just want it to, like, to be shown it fits into this, like, it's... It wasn't just for the reference.
No,
like,
I think it does.
Like, keep it going. But I'm too used to them, like, digging a hole and then moving to the next paddock.
Right.
I just made up in like an old grandpa saying that, yeah, buddy. Doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, buddy. I was just going to let it roll, you know? I honestly do believe there's more to that story that will be revealed, because there's like, one of the bigger unanswered questions from that first season is like, who were those guys that had Grogu? Why did they have him? Now we know he was rescued by Keller and Beck. They left in a Naboo starfighter or a Naboo ship. There's more to that story. There definitely is, and I'm almost positive we'll get that.
Are we going to go to Naboo?
I hope so. If there is something that would excite me even more than seeing Coruscant post Return of the Jedi, it's seeing Naboo post Return of the Jedi.
But Naboo got destroyed, didn't it? Didn't like Operation Cinder?
It got a little messed up.
I feel like I'm a real King Tom right now, actually.
It got a little messed up. It didn't get fully destroyed because Leia fucking saved the day when Operation Cinder was going down.
Got you. So I really hope they follow up on that, because that will sort of... help me ease out of that heavy meta-ness. But yeah, as I say, like, I did go out of my way. I've had a few. I think I just stuck to complaining about the Mandalorian's childcare as a sense of disbelief. So I just, and especially, yeah. So ignoring the effects and the way it was, yeah, it just bugged me how it was really shot. Like, look who it is, but don't look in the background because it looks super fake. But And then, yeah, the Royal Starship or whatever, it was a bit too much for me to bear. And it was a real mix of emotion, because it's like, yeah, I want the best for this dude. But in the scope of the show, like a meaningless cameo is not really going to make me enjoy the show more.
Right.
It's going to make me.
Of all the things like you've sort of brought up, like, you know, and obviously I can see, you know, why these would be an issue, but that's the one I'm most confident in isn't just a meaningless cameo, that there will be
because
more to it.
In like, you know, again, using the loophole of the Book of Boba Fett being a separate series, but in the scheme of things, if you watch Mandalorian 1 through 3, like, Luke Skywalker has a meaningless cameo.
Right.
Like, he just came, Disney, this is what we wanted, and then just pieced out of the series.
Yeah.
And yeah. And that definitely, I am like, because I'm very like, when I don't like something about Star Wars, you know, like a real like major factor, like Rise of Skywalker level, like, oh, what are you doing? Not just like, oh, that was a bit weird, but the rest of it's fantastic. I do a lot of introspection about what it's like to be disappointed about something that you really enjoy like this. And I try to like keep resetting to like don't hold a grudge, like go into each episode open-hearted and see if you can get like sort of one back.
Right.
And I would say the Perrin episode was that, excluding the bit at the end, which I thought was just like just comic book level writing. No offense to comic books, but I've only ever read Marvel, like I've only read Star Wars comics, so right. That was very Star Wars comic-y. But yeah, so I am like, because I started the start of the season on a bad foot, I don't want to bring it up again, Horace. The finale of Book of Boba Fett because that whole the moment of Din and Grogu getting separated was like, you know, so emotional for me, such a major, I thought, turning point in the series that, like, you know, at least, you know, for the majority of the next season, things will be totally different. And the fact that it all sort of just got unwound and everyone's back in pretty much their same, like, positions in life, it sort of really bugged me. So I do try to, like, go, well, I did go in already annoyed.
Right.
So am I judging these issues fairly, or is this sort of just feed into these guys write stuff that really annoy me because they're so like preoccupied with like Star Wars references and sort of like, you know, and there's sort of like an online backlash against people that like Andor or something. I don't like.
Well,
so
buddy,
I sort of hesitate
buddy,
to say,
buddy.
But
listen,
yeah.
There's an online backlash during Andor. There was an online backlash against people that liked Mandalorian or Book of Boba Fett. It does that every time something new comes out. It's the backlash against the last thing. It's like poetry. It rhymes.
Ah. Good reference. But yeah, I felt like their writing style was more like, let's write the story and then let's put it in Star Wars sort of thing. I understand, and I sort of like the idea of that, like, you know, one's like a novel and then one's like a comic book. But I also then remember that I started reading the Marvel Star Wars comic books and they made me feel like I was wasting my money.
Well, I mean, you know, the good thing is we get so much Star Wars content now that for anybody, you and I excluded even, that if there is something you don't dig, there's something right around the corner that has the potential.
Yeah, but that I think that's more so about themes. Like, I am open to, like, I did love the first two seasons. So, do you know what I mean? It was for me.
Right.
I just feel like they set this up as this big, you know, like show, like changing event. And then they went, hey guys, we can't have them apart because people love GIFs. And, you know, I would have thought it was going to go in a, you know, we'd see them training and then we'd go back to, you know, Din's life without him sort of thing. And then they'd converge again. But, that was not to be. But I do, you know, I know people say, oh, there's always so much coming, but I sort of see people use that as a, I don't know, like a scapegoat or something in, like it's not like the themes of it I don't like. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, Star Wars Visions comes out, and I was sort of like, oh, yeah, it was okay. But there's more stuff coming on, so I'm just like, oh, that's cool.
Right.
It's not the only Star Wars things for the year. But when it's something that you did like and then you're less cool on, it's not so much like it wasn't for me. It's just sort of like, yeah, I feel like they just need to tighten it up.
Well, listen, I certainly think that that's a shame, right? To go from really enjoying it to having issues with it. But, you know, my hope is that by the end of this season, you know, you're a lot more comfortable with it.
I am keeping my, I'm trying not to hold a grudge.
Right.
You know, and you know, in classic, you know, I thought it was very silly that Darth Maul came back. But I tried not to hold a grudge. And I, like, then, you know, in Clone Wars Season 7 or whatever, like I was it was really good. Like, right. It was entertaining. Even though that, like...
A big part like of it was something you didn't like.
Yeah, it sprang, like, sort of you have to get over that and then go, all right, well, just reset. Take it from here. Did you like this story? And, you know, it was pretty good. But I will forever think that was... very silly that, yeah. But anyway, that's a whole other kettle of fish. But I am, you know, I'm pretty confident, you know, you're going to see some mythosaur riding, some Moff Gideon.
Right.
And we're going to get into some good stuff. But, yeah, so, but I am concerned. But because I'm also like, oh, there's going to be all these cool scenes. But I'm like, but what other jumps of trains will I have to? How many more Mandalorian children will have to take one for the team?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
How many more dinners will we have to have midway through our time-sensitive mission to save a child?
Seemed like maybe a little more urgency was needed.
Come on, Paz. Come on, buddy. Let's go. But yeah, when you you did the analogy of Walter, was you're like, yeah, oh, I better still have a soup before I go looking for him.
Nah, man, dude, if Walter runs out my front door, and this happens occasionally. nothing gets done until I know that that dude is secure back in the house. Nothing gets done. I ain't having soup. I ain't making a campfire.
But yeah, I also hope by the end there's more people that I can look up to in the series.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because as I said, like apart from the little guy that doesn't talk and Bo-Katan, everyone else is deluded or evil.
Yeah, I need Din to really get off of this being part of the Children of the Watch thing. Like, I hope that is the way they're taking it. I can't see how it wouldn't be.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I just, because he's a dad, I'm just like, you want your child to wear this mask? Like, do you think that, like, I don't know, maybe he thinks it's dope wearing the mask. Like, I'm not sure, but, like, it doesn't, I don't know. I have a hard time reconciling that, like, wearing a mask all the time is a good thing.
Right.
This is the way.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Kuehl? He was a good dude.
Yeah, man. Big ups to him. What a dude.
Miss that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Miss that guy.
Miss that time.
That was a good continuation. The whole, I think it was like 7 and 8 of season one. You had the cliffhanger with Kuehl, then it was.
No, yeah.
Followed up, even though it was devastating. But
with the IG-11 stuff, cool.
Yeah, well, that was the thing about the first episode, is it's like, oh my god, they're rewriting the finale of two different seasons.
Yeah, because there's still something to be done with IG-11 for sure.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about anything that. Yeah, but I'm very apprehensive.
And I am very cautiously optimistic about the same thing.
It sounds like it could be wild, but I'm in a suspicious mood.
Yeah, I get it.
Oof. All right, I feel like, how many, oh my god, this is
two and a half hours, buddy. 2.5 hours.
Wow. Well, is it okay if we put this up on the, we'll put this on the public feed? Because my feed is very sparse.
Yeah, buddy.
So
do whatever you need to do. Yeah.
And then I'm actually, what day is it today?
Well, for me, it is still Sunday.
It's Sunday, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we've still got a couple more days. So I'm back in America on Friday.
Okay.
So, that just stressed me out, just thinking about that. So we'll be back to our weekly chats.
Yeah, and
we'll be on the same. It was very hard on different sides of the planet.
Oh my god!
Because when Hawes had his free time, that was when I had to get like, that was the middle of our day.
Or when Steele had his free time, I was dead ass asleep.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to be staying up late for it for the rest of the season. So, you know, if you have time after it airs this week, we could try to do something. If not, we'll wait till you're back.
Alrighty, Wednesday night. Yeah, what am I doing? I think I'm going bowling.
Woo!
No, I'm playing mini golf. I went bowling the other day, actually. My sister-in-law organizes the occasional fun event, and we went for a bowl. Here's my theory with bowling, right? Mm-hmm. So my sister-in-law, so Jackie's sister's husband's little sister is really cool. She's like into skating and stuff, and we're always enjoy a chat. and we were at the bowling, and she's like 16 or 15 or something like that. Do you know what I mean? So she wasn't doing very good at bowling, and I honestly, I don't mean to brag, but was clearly winning out of everyone on these two lanes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me, she goes, "Oh, you just like you're really good at it." And I said, have you played? And I said, "Oh, no, I just," and she goes, "Oh, I wish I was good at it straight away." And I said, "Oh, no, what a waste of natural talent. Like, what do you want to be good at? Like skateboarding or throwing a ball down a lane? Like, do you know what I mean? If you're going to be naturally talented at it, no offense to any bowlers out there, but it's like almost a curse. Like,
right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's sort of like you can only get so much natural talent. I don't want it at bowling."
I think that's a good point.
So I said, it's sort of good that you're losing because it means you're naturally talented at something potentially that you might actually like doing. And she's like, "Oh, I've never thought about it like that." And I said, that's why, and then I went into this other whole thing where it's like, that's why I never enter games of chance unless the prize is life-changing. Because I don't want to use up my luck horse.
Huh. Okay. I like that.
So, like, say if there's, like a shop or, you know, oh, you know, you put your receipt in here and you'll win, like, a $100 voucher or something. Nah. I'm not using my luck up on that.
Uh-uh.
I want to use my luck when I just buy one of those randomized lottery tickets. And it's like, you know, so I feel like maybe about $5,000. That's my, you got to have that as the prize.
Okay.
Before I want to use up my luck. And I know the whole concept of using up your luck, like it's probably statistically, like it's obviously not true. That's like the world does not issue with the amount of luck, but can you be sure it doesn't?
Yeah. And I don't know.
I used to have this thing. I do it. I'll tell you something.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is a big one, horse. Are okay. You ready? This is
so
good for everyone that's listened to 2.5 hours.
Uh-huh.
I'm obsessed and have been for 30 years with constantly touching wood.
Okay.
If I see a piece of wood, like if I walk past a tree or a power pole or a windowsill or a table, I have to touch it for luck.
Okay.
I'm doing it now. Because when I would skateboard, and I still skateboard, but I don't try things that
are dangerous.
I don't like to. I choose my launches into the air. They're very calculated risks. But what I would do if I was trying something and I would think about hurting myself, I developed this what's the opposite of a phobia? Like a charm.
What would you call that? A superstition.
Superstition, perfect. I'd touch the top of my board, like the nose of my board. I'd lean down and just touch the top of the board, like the nose.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like touch wood. And then my bad thoughts about getting hurt on that attempt of the trick would evaporate. Like because if you like think I might twist my ankle doing this and then you do it and you twist your ankle, you're like,
I knew
I jinxed myself.
Yeah.
So it was to reverse jinx. I would just tap the end of my board. So, and then I've followed that through in life. And if I ever have a bad thought about something, like something bad happening or anything, I'll like touch wood. And then if I'm in bed and I think of something and I like like, because at the moment it's a real concern because I'm staying in all these different beds and I have to like know there's a wood, some wood around me to touch if I have a bad thought while I'm going to sleep. And it can be paper. That's a wood product.
Okay. Okay.
And when I was in my old car, it when I was just turned 18, it had fake wood panels on the interior.
Okay.
And I would say, touch fake wood, because I would acknowledge it's fake wood, but it would still give me the immunity power.
Okay.
All do you right. think of me? How are you taking all this information? Are you looking at me differently now?
Nah, buddy. No. No.
Oh, really? Some people have thought it's quite strange. But you'll, like, Jackie loves it. Like, she'll just see me like, walking up the street and she'll just, like, you know, if we're meeting, she'll just notice that I just reach out and touch, like, all the trees as I go past. Not like I don't lean over. I just do it.
It's natural.
Like, it's like I'm doing it sort of like a shoplifter would, like, put something, you know, they're trying to look like they're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of maybe looks like that I'm recreating that dream sequence from Gladiator, you know, where he's like got his hands in all the field. He's feeling that, you know, when he's having those memories about mm-hmm. going to see his family or whatever. Remember the film Gladiator?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. When he's running his hands through the wheat. That's you, but touching wood.
I once watched a preview of The Force Awakens. Just a few seats up from the Gladiator himself, Russell Crowe.
Nice. You know what I do? I have some superstitions. I had a lucky shirt for the longest time.
Golden Boy.
It was a lucky shirt. That luck got broken pretty hardcore last year, so it's no longer the lucky shirt. I no longer wear it. But for a couple of years, it was my lucky shirt. And, you know, it's one of those things, right? Like, oh, anytime I wear this shirt, some good happens, right? Well, it's probably only because I made that mental connection once, and then it just happened to happen a couple more times, you know? But that was my lucky shirt for a long time.
Well, you do need to come up with these, because at the end of the day, we're just on this, like, rock in space hurtling. Yeah. And it's quite so you have to... You know, we had to invent like TV and all these things to distract us from the terror that eventually we will die and become dust. So, mate, if you got your heavy lucky shirt or you got to burn it or I got to touch some wood.
Whatever.
You know?
Whatever, buddy. I am all about that weird kind of superstitious stuff. I do a lot of that. So I relate.
I'm now that I'm talking about it, I have to touch it even more. This is going to be really hard to get out of. This might be it for me. I stopped listening when you started talking about your wood touching. 2 hours and 30 minutes in. All right, Hawes.
All right, buddy.
Dude. I should have had my little Fitbit thing or something on.
So we see how many steps you got in while you're pacing around talking to me about Mandalorian.
I've been walking the whole time. I've been walking for 2.5 hours in a... What's 14-foot space.
Wow.
I've just been going back and forth. Well, no, set two. Brooklyn. All right. So, yeah, we'll be back. We're going to put this one up as a all access chunk. You know how I feel now.
Mm-hmm.
I also get really paranoid about that. You know, when I'm in the grumpy Star Wars mood, I'm going to bum people out and stuff. But I hope that I clarified all my gripes with that, even though you might not be feeling it as the listener, that you can sort of go, oh, yeah, I see where he's coming from.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe it doesn't bother you, but I think I would say your gripes make sense to me, even if they don't all bother me in the same way. So I think,
yeah, like it's definitely not in like, I didn't like it because it was a woman.
No, no.
It was a woman. Yeah, type deal. But yeah, I've had a absolute, I wish I did measure how long I just walked. But I've had an awesome time and I feel invigorated.
Good.
I feel freed of my pain. It's good to get it out. It's good, yeah, to, it's good to chat. I'm glad I didn't go on a Twitter assault. This is far more productive for me. I thought you could add for the next time you do the Mandalorian review, like a siren for Steel once when Will goes, yeah, well, maybe it's the, he went off to buy other things and it's like, oh, we better push that.
Uh-oh, it's the gas leak siren.
The heart monitor. The warning siren that Pershing's hospital needed.
Really?
I want that on the podcast. That's ridiculous. Like, come on. Like, how does it not? How does, like, it's a hospital, yeah?
Yeah.
A space hospital. You, like, nah, come on. Come on. Like, how quick did he, like, he just left.
Yep.
Like, he didn't even wait to see how it, like, that's, again, I don't want to bring up Grey's Anatomy, but that would not pass. That would not fly. I don't know any of the doctor's names in the show. I'd recognize them all by, like, face, but Doctor, that person would not do that. They are very, I've filmed scenes where it's like montages of the doctors staring at the patient for days.
Oh, really?
They dim the lights because it's night and then it's daytime. Then someone comes in to say, how's it going? Get him down to Grace. You're going to get hurt. Seattle, mate. Seattle Healthcare. It's an amazing thing. It's so funny inside the set, which is amazing. It's like a full two-story hospital. All the posters on the wall are all like Seattle. Like,
right.
Welcome to, like, it's really they're going hard on the Seattle. I want to go into an actual hospital and see if it's got that much like local merchandise.
I'll let you know next time I go into one.
Well, I would appreciate that, Hawes.
Yeah, I'll report back.
I hope you, there's you have way less opportunities to give me reports on that.
Sure, I hope
so.
As
we all do. You got it, buddy. You got it.
I hope so. I'm touching wood right now, bro. I'm touching some wood. I picked up a new one.
All right. Look, this is how I'm licking the wood.
Well, that's it. It's all done now. That's all we need.
Your tongue. That's the jackpot right there. That's as much as my lifestyle will allow wood to enter me. You know
Fair
what I'm
enough.
Saying?
Fair enough.
Bloody splinters though. That is the worst way.
Yeah, not the best.
When Harry got a splinter, and I'm just like, I always have these like crazy flashbacks because he looks so much like me when I was a little kid. Like it triggers, like I have Grogu-esque flashbacks to my youth when he does stuff.
Getting splinters taken out of your hand.
Oh, and just how traumatic it is.
Yeah.
Like I'm always like, I know this seems like the worst thing. You just have to, like, if you just stay still, we can help you. Like, but, yeah, that's, there's no luck in that. That is a bad use of the superstition license, the splinter.
Yep.
That's when touching wood goes too far.
when touching wood goes wrong.
Which is a good analogy for the Star Wars references in The Mandalorian. It's like, I like touching wood, but I don't want splinters.
Now that is a way to bring it full circle.
Banging. All right, Blue Harvest, one of my favorite podcasts of all time. Go listen to it.
Oh, and Tuesday, the 28th of March, we got a special bonus episode coming out with my mom.
Ah, awesome.
Yeah.
And then, what are you discussing?
So I took questions from the patrons, from the Blue Harvest patrons, and I get her feelings on Mandalorian and Bad Batch so far.
Oh my God, sorry. My wife has just messaged me, and I was quite scared for a second. She just messaged me. She wrote steel with a full stop. Right, first message. So it seems like, oh my God, this is something bad. Because, like, I already know my name.
Right.
So why is she establishing that? Next message. I'm going to watch Succession. Next message. But I will watch it again with you. Next message. And I'll probably fall asleep anyway. Next message. So it's fine.
That's pretty funny.
I mean, I thought, like, with the steel, I was just like, oh, no, what? It's like, did a pterodactyl eat our child? Like, something bad happened, but no, it's fine. I'm in this season of Succession, Halls.
I know. I do know that. You were very excited.
Yeah. Financial reporter.
Nice.
Looking into the, whenever they have... they have a shareholders meeting in California at the Waystar Cinema Group's thing, which is just the Warner Brothers front of house with rebadged. And you will see a mushroom-headed financial reporter briskly walking across the street.
There he is. Back again.
There he is. I would be interested... Can I add a question to your... have you recorded the podcast yet with your mom?
Yes, I have. But we're going to do another one sometime.
Okay, my question is, if she listened to this, am I crazy? That I just want her view of how I'm doing.
Okay, I'll definitely...
All the gripes about the show, my table licking, the whole schmozzle.
I almost guarantee you that I'll have an answer for you within 24 hours because she will listen.
Excellent. All right. Good to know. That said, I don't know whether I should take a mental diagnosis from someone that watched every bit of Star Wars media in under about a month.
She tore through it.
Dude, the Clone Wars.
Yep. Bro, and so just as a spoiler, right? So... I ask her, hey, if you could see any show or movie about, now that you've seen all of Star Wars, about any character, who would it be, right? And I was expecting, you know, like, and not that this is a bad character, but, you know, like maybe somebody a little more, you know, A-list Star Wars character. Her answer was Gungi, the Wookiee. Like, my mom went with a deep cut answer. I said, it's got her. She's making deep cuts. That would be like, you know, if you ask Corey and he'd name off some clone that was in an episode or two, you know? Gungi, the Wookiee Jedi.
Gungi's the Wookiee Jedi. Yeah. I could tell you who Gungi was. But I wouldn't have been able to tell you their name was Gungi.
Oh, okay.
When you say Gungi, I'm like, oh, yeah, the Wookiee Jedi. But if someone said, what's the Wookiee Jedi's name? Furbo. So maybe she'll maybe she'll ingrain it in my
I think she might. Head.
All right, I look forward to that bonus episode. And yeah, thanks for chatting.
Yeah,
I've had a wondrous time, and I feel like after all this walking, I could calories have been burned enough that we can tuck into a bit of Rosebud fish and chips. Oh, buddy.
Do it, buddy. Do it for me.
Woo! Yeah, tater cakes. All right, thanks for listening, everyone. Sorry if I'm nuts, but here we are. This is the hole we have dug. Don't go to the other paddock.
No.
Stay by this hole. I'll try to fill in the sand.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll all get together when the season is over, and we're all like, okay, they pulled it, you know, they pulled it all together, and we'll all touch some wood together.
Word. I do think though, you know, although that Book of Boba Fett finale was shocking. I was so happy for a second, and then I was like, wait.
That's what made me laugh was the turnaround. Oh, yeah, I think that, although. We'll see you guys soon.